This is your ultimate stop for everything sports. The Golden State Media Concepts Sports Podcast. Should I say more? From the NFL, MLB, the NBA, to MMA. It's all in here. The Golden State Media Concepts Sports Podcast. Listen now.
Welcome to the GSMC Sports Podcast. This episode is brought to you by the GSMC Podcast Network. And as always, I am your host, Jesse Tapia. So here we are, Monday, start of the week. Let me tell you what's going on today. We're going to be talking about... Let's talk about the Yankee series with the Red Sox for the first segment. I was debating on whether or not I wanted to talk about Ray Lewis and his speech for the first segment, along with all the other Hall of Fame stuff to talk about. But we'll talk more about the Yankees and Red Sox for this first segment. Also talk about the A's, how they're only 2.5 games back. I mean, the A's just swept Detroit. Red Sox just swept the Yankees. So, I mean, it's going great for one team, going absolutely terrible for another. So we'll do that for the first segment. Second segment, like I said, we'll head over to the Hall of Fame. I got thoughts on Ray Lewis's speech. Randy Moss, Terrell Owens not being there, and I also, now we've gotten to the point where I think we've all come to the conclusion that Terrell Owens, Randy Moss, and Jerry Rice are the three greatest receivers of all time, but which one is the best? So I'll give some thoughts on that. I mean, it's all opinions, so someone's going to think it's Jerry Rice, some will think it's T.O., some will think it's Randy Moss, but I'll give my reasoning as to why I think it's one person. Third segment, we're going to be talking about the NBA. Not really too much news coming out of there, but of course, just some things to talk about. Vegas coming out with the win-loss, or the over-unders for wins for teams and all that. So we'll be talking about that. And then for the fourth segment, we'll be talking about anything else going on in the world of sports, such as Tiger Woods. Started off the first two rounds hot. I mean, just a complete opposite of what he's been doing all year long. Usually he's terrible in the first two rounds and picks it up in the last two, but... I mean, it was the other way around this time. So we'll be talking about that. And like I said, anything else going on in the world of sports. So remember last week when I told you that the Yankees looked like they were beginning... Well, it was like 2 weeks ago. I was talking about how I figured the Yankees were beginning to implode. Started with that Gary Sanchez game against Tampa Bay, where he didn't hustle to that ball that got by him when he was playing catcher. And he didn't run out that grounder at the last play for the last out of the game, where if he would have been safe, they would have tied it up and went to extras. So when that happened, I mean, you could see it kind of felt like the sky was falling as far as the Yankees. Like, it wasn't like falling yet, but you could tell they're really on the verge of, like I said, imploding. They could either fix it or not. And now I'd say they're imploding. Aaron Judge is out till September, I'd say. Gary Sanchez won't be back till late August, early September. And even then, I mean, Gary Sanchez has been absolutely terrible all year long. So, I mean, how much does that really help you? Severino, I mean, not really, hasn't really been an ace since the wild card or the All-Star break ended. And it's just, I mean, the Yankees were what, 6.5 up on the A's? 5.5 up on the A's for that first wild card spot? After the weekend is over, now they're only up 2.5? I mean, that's a problem there. So let's look at their series with the Red Sox. I mean, the Yankees should have got two games here, given the leads that they held in two of them, and, I mean, just the way that they were playing. So we see it after their first two innings. The Yankees at 4-0 on Thursday. Sox end up adding a run to the bottom of the second, so I made it 4-1. After three, it's 4-2, and then Jonathan Holder comes in, and... I mean, we talked about it last week. The dude just gave up 7 runs, didn't get an out, no strikeouts, and a walk. The dude was terrible. So they lose that one 15-7. Obviously not great for New York there. And then you get to Thursday, and I believe it was Rick Porcello that day, if I'm not mistaken. Let me double check. But either way, on Friday, the dude throws a gem, and it was Rick Porcello. Rick Porcello going up against Luis Severino. Porcello threw a one-hitter complete game. Only run of the game from the Yankees came from Miguel Andujar, which was a home run. Severino in that game pitched 5 2/3 innings, 4 earned runs. Didn't really do well there. I think that's the game where Alex Cora ended up getting... did he get tossed in that one, or was it Saturday? I think he got tossed in Friday's matchup. And like I said, Red Sox win that one 4-1. I mean, it wasn't really close. Like I said, Porcello pitched a gem. Then we get to Saturday, and it's more of the same, I'd say. No fight from the Yankees. Nathan Eovaldi, former Yankee player, pitches lights out. And I'm sure the Red Sox are pleasantly surprised with the way that Eovaldi has been pitching in his first two starts with the Red Sox. I figured with him trading for him, he's going to be more of a back end of the rotation type of guy. Maybe in the postseason, he's out there pitching out from the bullpen. But the guy has pitched two gems with the Red Sox since he's been there. And honestly, it's been a bit of a shock. Not a shocker, but a surprise, I'd say. Let me see if I can pull up Eovaldi's numbers. And like I said, I wasn't really expecting this from him. But he ended up pitching 8 innings, no earned runs, 4 strikeouts, a walk. Kimbrel did get close to blowing it for the Red Sox, but either way, he ended up getting the job done. And then we get to yesterday's game, Sunday's game on ESPN. That was a killer for the Yankees. The Yankees all series long have looked kind of dead playing the Red Sox. Like there's just no fight with that team. Even when they got a lead, it's just kind of like, what's wrong with the Yankees? It makes no sense. So I'm watching the game yesterday with my pops, and I mean, you figure that a sweep is going to be pretty hard to do. I think the last time Boston swept the Yankees in a 4-game series about 2 decades ago or something like that. I can't remember the exact year or whatnot. All right, but either way, I'm figuring the Yankees are going to take Sunday's match, at least get one up on the Red Sox before heading to Chicago for Monday. And it looked like they were going to do that. Yankees were down 1-0 after 6. 7th inning comes, and David Price gives up 2 walks. Ends up coming out. And before that, I mean, Price was pitching really well. Price has had his struggles. I mean, we've all seen it with the Yankees so far this season. Well, even ever since Price came to the Red Sox, he's just struggled against the Yankees. I'm not really sure what it is, but the Yankees have just had his number. But either way, in this game, Price is pitching well. Tanaka's pitching well. I mean, Tanaka was... It was ridiculous. I mean, getting J.D. Martinez a strikeout 3 times. He ended up coming away with 9 strikeouts. Didn't get past 5 innings, though. Gave up 6 hits. Red Sox did well to extend their at-bats, meaning see a lot of pitches and tire out Tanaka. Yankees haven't really been doing that as far as the Red Sox pitchers. But either way, like I said, Tanaka's pitching well. Price is pitching well. We're a 1-0 game after 6. 7th inning comes. Price probably out there 1 batter too long. Ends up walking the first 2. He comes out. Heath Embry comes in. And, I mean, it all just goes wrong for the Red Sox there. Heath Embry couldn't get an out. He ended up getting 1. But like I said, you got Shane Robinson, who I think we could all say has been the Yankees' worst hitter all season, coming up to bunt. He's bunting with 2 strikes. The guy is bunting with 2 strikes, and Heath Embry, for some reason, refused to throw him a strike. At least to get him out. He threw at him like 3 different times on that at-bat. Either way, Robinson gets in. Embry ends up giving the 2 runs. Of course, those 2 runs are credited to David Price since those were his runners. But either way, I mean, another problem with that was the fact that Xander Bogaerts ended up botching a sure thing double play, which if he would have made the double play, it would have been 1-1 rather than the Yankees blowing it open. So that happens, and it's 4-1 after 7. Red Sox don't put up any runs in the bottom of the 7th or 8th. And then we get to the 9th. It's 4-1. Chapman is coming in to close the game out. I believe he's had 26 straight save opportunities converted. It was either 22 or 26. And you figure game's over. Chapman's looking hot. Looking good. And he just blows it. I mean, you could tell that that Chapman was a little bit rattled. Okay, because, I mean, having him go out there, he was throwing heat, pitching well, and then he walks a couple of guys, and then I believe it was bases loaded, 4-1, bases loaded, J.D. Martinez comes up, and I mean, I think everyone had to know J.D. was swinging first pitch. The guy struck out three times, and you figure Chapman, who's been struggling to throw strikes, is going to give him, so he's going to get something in the zone. He does. Martinez ends up hitting it over the second baseman. Sandy Leona and Mookie Betts score. You get Jackie Bradley Jr. to second. So then Xander Bogaerts ends up coming up after that. And, I mean, he hits a ground ball to Miguel Andujar. You could tell as Andujar's fielding it that he's struggling to get a grip on it and to field it properly. I mean, it's easy to tell because it looked kind of awkward when he was fielding the ball. So he grabs it. Took a while, ends up throwing it to first, one hops it to the first baseman. I believe it was Greg Bird playing first base, and it was a bad throw, but it's one that a first baseman's got to get. You're a professional baseball player, it's a one hop, it wasn't to his side, to his left or to his right, it was right in front of him. I feel like he's got to field that ball. He doesn't. Jackie Bradley Jr. ends up scoring. It's 4-4. And, I mean, once the Red Sox tie it up, you kind of figure the game is over. Just given how the Yankees have played in the first three games, and it's just like they're, like I said, like they're dead. I don't know. There's no fight with this team. So, I mean, the top of the 10th comes. Yankees hitters get put away. Like, it was ridiculous. Like, not even, like, they were terrible at bats. This is not the Yankees team that we saw earlier on this season and for most of this season. This Yankee team from the All-Star break has been absolutely terrible. So, by the way, like I said, top of the 10th. Yankee at bats, terrible. 1-2-3. Let's go to the bottom of the 10th. And Benintendi comes up. You got a man on second. Betts on first. Yankees playing the shift. And Benintendi literally hits a ground ball where it wasn't hard hit or anything like that. It's a bouncer. And of course, Benintendi hits it to the only part of the shift where there's not a guy there in the middle, where it's too difficult for the second baseman or if it was a shortstop playing in that little area to get to it. And you got him walking off winning 5-4. The Yankees needed this fourth game. They needed this win. And they couldn't get it. And it's just like, you want to see some fight from Aaron Boone at least. Just at a press conference. Not even call someone out, but just show some fire. It's like, it's very pedestrian from what I've seen from him. Is what I should say. He's been very pedestrian. Not really fired up. Like the Red Sox on Friday, like I said, you had Alex Cora getting thrown out. That's something where Alex Cora has been a pretty mild-mannered manager the entire year, but he's willing to get out and fight for his guys. You kind of need to see something like from that from Boone. Get thrown out. Show some fight. But he hasn't done that. And, I mean, it's just the Yankees right now, they're starting a series with the White Sox. They're only 2.5 up on Oakland, who, I mean, absolutely destroyed the Tigers over their three-game series, sweeping them there. A's are one of the hottest teams in baseball. Yankees are playing probably their worst baseball this season. It's not looking great, and the Mariners are right there, too. I'm not going to go and say the Yankees are going to miss the playoffs, but I do have that kind of feeling. I'm going to give the Yankees more of a chance. Of course, they still got time, and let's be real here. The Yankees are still probably the third or fourth best team in the MLB. So, as of right now, I'd say, yeah, they're imploding, but they did well enough for most of the season to be able to implode like this. I guess if that makes any sense. They gave themselves some breathing room. So we'll see what ends up happening in their series against the White Sox. That starts today. Like I said, they got swept by Boston. Right now, Boston is far and away the best team in baseball. Like, Houston's great, but it's just ridiculous the way Boston has been playing all season long. Like, they haven't had that slump yet. And who knows? Maybe that'll happen. But either way, you got the Red Sox sweeping the Yankees, winning Sunday night's game in 10 innings after the Yankees were up 4-1 for, I guess, from the sixth inning and on. And you got the A's, who are only 2.5 back for that first wildcard spot. I mean, if I'm the Yankees, I don't want to go to Oakland. Oakland is terrible as far as selling out and all that this season. I mean, it's ridiculous. They had less than 20,000 on yesterday's game, I believe it was, or Saturday's. And they're in the thick of a playoff race. But, I mean, they'll show up for the playoff game. So, like I said, if I'm the Yankees, I don't want to play in Oakland. But either way, we're going to wrap it up here. Next up, we're going to be talking about the Hall of Fame ceremony and all the other stuff that comes with it. So stay tuned, and I'll be right back.
Are you looking for the very best NFL and college football podcast? Then check out the GSMC Football Podcast. Get the latest football news, both on and off the field. From the NFL draft to trades to the rumor mill to the NFL combines, they got you covered. That's GSMCpodcast.com/football-podcast. Get updates on college rivalries, game day insights, and much, much more. It's football talk the way you want it. This show eats, sleeps, and breathes football. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Visit GSMCpodcast.com for more info.
And welcome back to the GSMC Sports Podcast. We spent that first 15 minutes of the show talking about the Yankees, talked a little bit about the Red Sox. I mean, it was more so a Yankees segment than it was a Red Sox segment, and also mentioned the A's in that one, too. So we did that, and now we move on to the Hall of Fame ceremony, which, I mean, let's just unpack it. You had Dawkins giving his speech. It was a good one. Urlacher, not really a speech guy, but nonetheless gave a good one. I was more so looking forward to Randy Moss's speech and Ray Lewis's. Obviously, Terrell Owens not being there, I didn't get a chance to check out his whole speech. I saw a couple snippets from it talking about how I think it was the Hall of Fame voters aren't really aligned with what like it's supposed to take to get into the Hall of Fame, if that makes any sense. That's kind of paraphrasing the quote, but either way, it kind of seems like it was one where he figures the Hall of Fame voters, I'd say, just have their own rules as to what it takes to get in rather than what it truly means, what it truly takes to get into the Hall of Fame. Like, it's two separate things, I think, is the point he was trying to get across. But either way, I wanted to see what Randy Moss was going to say. I enjoyed his speech. It was a good one. Thanked Bill Belichick. Thanked Robert Kraft. And for some reason, I mean, Bill Belichick has become more and more likable over the years. And you normally don't see coaches, and like as far as like how Belichick acts, become likable until the end of their career. So maybe there's something there. Who knows? But either way, I liked how Randy Moss shouted out Rand, West Virginia, and all that, his roots, where he came from. And like I said, I enjoyed his speech. It was a good one. Very heartfelt and all that. But then we get to Ray Lewis's speech. This was maybe the most anticipated Hall of Fame speech in the history of the Hall of Fame. It might have been Terrell Owens if he was there, but since he wasn't, I mean, it wasn't going to get the same publicity that these guys were going to get. So I'm waiting to see, what's Ray Lewis going to do here? Because we know Ray Lewis is a very outspoken man about everything in his life. Well, not everything, but most things that he's passionate about. And he gets up there, and like I said, you had Randy Moss. He's behind the podium giving his speech. Brian Urlacher was behind the podium giving his speech. Brian Dawkins, Robert Brazil, they're all behind the podium giving their speeches, just as every other Hall of Famer that has walked and been at that ceremony did. But Ray Lewis? No. There is no way we were going to have Ray Lewis stand behind a podium and give a speech. And mind you, going into this, the record for the longest Hall of Fame speech was Brett Favre at 36. I can't remember Brett Favre's speech word for word or anything like that or any big moments from it. But either way, I don't know what Brett Favre, like what in the world Brett Favre had to say for 36 minutes. Ray Lewis, I mean, I figured he was going to break that easily. So we get Ray coming, and it was a good speech to start. I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed Ray Lewis's speech. I really did. So he's talking. He's pretty much thanking everyone, talking about how his roots, where he came from, it was tough. I mean, he mentioned one where him and his best friend were sitting under some tree talking about how they were starving and all that, and they had to pray, hopefully, to get a break. How his mom sent him over to Florida with a bus ticket and $20 worth of food stamps. I think that was right before he ended up, that was right before he was heading over to play over at Miami University. So they were talking about that, and there was a lot of good moments. I mean, you could tell that that whole family, like, it meant a lot to him. Ray Lewis kept saying that it's not just me up here. It's all of us, talking about his family and everyone that was with him. Thank trainers, thank coaches, thank his high school wrestling coach and his high school football coaches. Let's see, what else did he do? Embarrassed his kids. But either way, it was a good speech. He had Jonathan Ogden come up there. Jonathan Ogden, one of the best offensive linemen ever. They did the little Ray Lewis dance. Ray Lewis yelled out Baltimore about 15 different times. That was a little bit weird, too. Because you hear him, he's on there, and he goes, Baltimore! And then you hear a loud amount of applause and all that. And he goes, Baltimore! And they're applauding still, and it's still loud. And he goes, Baltimore! 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 And he literally did that about 10 more times. And you could just tell, like, it was funny to see and all that in here, but you could tell Ray Lewis was really into his speech, and it really meant a lot to him. You could tell it meant a lot to the Baltimore Ravens fans that were there, too, and there was plenty of them there, I'd say. Okay, so he's doing that, and the speech is going good. Like, I'm not like, oh, this is dragging on for too long or anything like that. I'm really enjoying the stories this guy is telling. And then he gets into, at the end of his speech, like, some world problems. And it's like, oh, yep, this is a Ray Lewis speech now. I mean, of course, what he was saying did hold some weight as far as changes need to be made and all that. And that, I mean, him in the class in the Hall of Fame, like the guys in the Hall of Fame, they can make that change. So I was fine with it. But either way, I did enjoy Ray Lewis's speech. It did not go longer than Brett Favre's, though. Ray Lewis's speech went about 33 minutes. Like I said, Favre's went 36. But like I said, enjoyed the speech, liked the stories he told, and I figured it was a good one. Like I said, it didn't drag on or anything like that. And you're just like, oh, this guy needs to end it. But either way, I mean, I'd say that this might be, and I'd have to go back, I'm just going off the top of my head, but this might be the best Hall of Fame class of all time. Because Ray Lewis, I'd say, is one of the greatest linebackers of all time. Brian Urlacher was a very good linebacker. I'm not sure if we consider one of the greatest of all time. That's not something that really ever gets talked about. Brian Dawkins was, I mean, one of the greatest Eagles to ever play. One of the greatest safeties. I wouldn't say, is he one of the greatest safeties? That's another one, too. Maybe. But either way, we had Terrell Owens and Randy Moss, both two of the top three receivers ever. I mean, this was a great class here. And, I mean, watching the Hall of Fame ceremony, it just felt weird with Terrell Owens not being there. Kind of like, it's just, how do you say, like, it wasn't sad, but it's just something was missing, and it was Terrell Owens. Like, you kind of just wanted him to be there, as like I did. I mean, I'm sitting there watching Randy Moss give his speech, Urlacher give his, Dawkins give his, and it's just T.O.'s missing. I really wish T.O. would have been there, but again, I do understand why he wasn't. And maybe this whole Terrell Owens thing kind of changes up the Hall of Fame and how people get in, who gets voted in going forward. Meaning, the Hall of Fame voters kind of made it about themselves when it came to Terrell Owens when he was first up for eligibility to get in. Because whether you like him or not, it doesn't really matter. But the fact is, Terrell Owens, without a doubt, should have been a first ballot Hall of Famer. And I'm literally saying that, like, that's a fact. Terrell Owens should have been a first ballot Hall of Famer. I could care less what you think of Terrell Owens, whether you hate him, you love him, it doesn't matter. He was a first, should have been a first ballot Hall of Famer. He doesn't get in the first time, okay, maybe some other guys took a while to get in, so they put him in there. Fine, whatever. The second year, no doubt, shouldn't have lasted past the second year. Didn't get voted in again. Doesn't get voted in until his third year. We all know the story. I'm going to go out and say it. Terrell Owens was blackballed by the Hall of Fame voters. For him not to get in the first or second try is inexcusable. So they did make it about themselves that way. They punished Terrell Owens, which is ridiculous. And what I mean by change going forward is, how about we just develop a committee? Let's get all the journalists out of there. They don't need to be voting for the Hall of Fame. Why? Because they have biases. Because maybe Terrell Owens didn't give this guy an interview, and he's not going to vote in T.O. now. I mean, you had voters saying they wouldn't have voted Terrell Owens in if they knew that he wasn't going to be at the Hall of Fame ceremony. That's terrible. It's not about you. Get over yourself. Vote the guy in and move on. No one cares about you. It is not about you. I could care less what you've done over your journalistic career to get there. It doesn't matter. Vote the guys that need to get in. And they didn't do that. So I'm saying get rid of the journalists. Like I said, could care less what they've done over their journalistic career. Stuff like this shouldn't be happening. Get rid of them. Get a committee where there's set guidelines as far as what it takes to be a Hall of Famer. You do that, you have the committee vote, and I think it goes better that way, rather than having these journalists who got their biases because they're so hurt for some reason over Terrell Owens. I mean, it's ridiculous. So that's just my two cents about it right there. I do think we need to go more of a committee style where, I mean, it's not journalists or anything like that. It's guys brought in by the Hall of Fame. Like I said, there's a set amount of guidelines and all that. So we'll see what happens going forward. I saw Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk over at NBC reported that the Hall of Fame's thinking of a rule where if you don't show up to the ceremony, then you don't get into the Hall of Fame, which is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. The Hall of Fame is slowly becoming a joke and slowly becoming very entitled and taking themselves way too seriously. Like I said, it's not about the journalists. No one cares about them. It's not about the guys who work for the Hall of Fame. It's about the guys who are getting in. Let's get the guys who deserve to get in when they deserve to, meaning guys like Terrell Owens, who should be first ballot Hall of Famers. Let's get them in the first time. So, like I said, that's just my two cents. And before we finish up this segment, just want to give some thoughts. Terrell Owens, Randy Moss, Jerry Rice. Who's the best? My pick, Randy Moss. If I was an NFL cornerback, a top NFL cornerback at my position, and I got to decide really who I don't want to face, who I'm the most afraid of going against, it's Randy Moss. You could know what Randy Moss was going to do, and he's still going to beat you. And Jerry Rice was great, but you know what? Randy Moss was an absolute freak of nature. Randy Moss, for me, is the greatest receiver of all time. I'd go Randy Moss, then I'd probably go Jerry Rice, and then Terrell Owens at third. And I know all the old heads out there are going to be, oh, how is it not Jerry Rice? Jerry Rice did this, Jerry Rice did that. I don't care. Randy Moss, athletically, is better than Jerry Rice and is pretty much more dominant. Oh, Jerry Rice won Super Bowls. Cool. Played with an all-time great team. And I'm not trying to discount Jerry Rice, but I mean, as far as individualistic stats and all that, Randy Moss is just better for me. So I think Randy Moss is the best. I mean, you could think it's Jerry Rice. I could care less what the opinion is of it. I'm just letting you know. I think Randy Moss is the best receiver of all time. So that's all I got to say about that. We're going to be moving on, talking about some NBA stuff. So stay tuned, and I'll be right back.
Check out the show that's built on the MMA. From the UFC to extreme cage fighting, they got the fights covered. Check out the GSMC MMA podcast. Get the latest news on past or upcoming fights. Join us as we talk to and about some of the biggest names in the MMA, past, present, and future. When it's the fight game, there's just one show to check out. GSMCpodcast.com/MMA-podcast. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Visit GSMCpodcast.com for more info.
And welcome back to the GSMC Sports Podcast. We spent that first segment talking about the Yankees. They're pretty bad right now. Red Sox, pretty good. The A's right behind the Yankees for that top wildcard spot. And then, for the second segment, we talked about the Hall of Fame ceremony. Ray Lewis's speech is what you'd expect. Randy Moss gave a good speech, and Terrell Owens stunk with him not being there. But I don't blame him. I blame the Hall of Fame for that one, as should everyone else. But, I mean, of course, you got the guy, as always, in the Hall of Fame. He should be honored. No, he should have been in the Hall of Fame 2 years ago. But everyone's going to have their opinion, I guess. So we'll move on from that, and then we move on over to the NBA. NBA win totals from Westgate Superbook came out for the upcoming season. Let's look at a couple of the notables. You got the Boston Celtics at 57.5. Let's see. We got the Denver Nuggets at 47.5. Golden State top at 62.5. Houston at 54.5. Pacers at 47.5. Lakers at 48.5. Miami at 41.5. Milwaukee 46.5. Minnesota 44.5. New Orleans 45.5. Oklahoma City 50.5. I guess everyone is really expecting the Thunder to make a big jump without Nella. I mean, if the Thunder are miles better than what they were last season, then Melo might have to answer some questions there. I'm just saying. All right, because, I mean, this Thunder team, did they really get that much better by letting go of Carmelo? People are talking as if they're the third best team in the West. Maybe even the second. I've seen some people say they're the second. I'm not sure how much I believe in that. I don't really believe too much in Russell Westbrook-led teams. Russell Westbrook, easily top five point guard. That's obvious. That's just obvious there. But as far as his teams and him leading them, I mean, they don't really tend to do well. So then we got Philly at 54.5, right behind Boston. Let's see. Portland at 41. You got Toronto at the same as Philly with 54. Utah at 48.5, and then Washington at 44.5. So, what I'm trying to get at here is the Lakers. ESPN did their little win-loss projections. They got their little algorithm that goes into all of it, all just the nerdy stuff, okay? It's a complete sham because it had the Lakers as a non-playoff team, which is ridiculous. Anyone who doesn't think the Lakers are not a... Anyone who thinks that the Lakers are not a playoff team, I mean, just stop, please. Just stop. Just watch the game and just keep it to yourself. Because the Lakers are, without a doubt, a playoff team. Anyone who thinks otherwise is just flat out wrong. You're just thinking too hard. Yes, the team on paper does not look great. But let's not forget LeBron James now plays for that team. I mean, you honestly think that with LeBron, they wouldn't make the playoffs? Which is why I put absolutely zero stock into whatever ESPN has to say as far as win-loss projections for any league. Because, I mean, it's ridiculous. And then they come out, make it a story and all that. I mean, whoever came up with it, it shouldn't be used. I get that you want to use all the nerdy numbers and all that, but, I mean, the Lakers are going to be a playoff team. That is guaranteed. But as far as their numbers, as far as this one goes, like I said, they're at 48.5. That's behind Golden State, Houston, the Thunder, and I think they're behind one more team. Let's see. Thunder there. Who's that other team? They're tied with Utah. So I think that just might be it. They're tied with Utah, I'd say. So I've got them as the fourth, fifth best team in the West. I mean, that's perfectly fair. That's where I got them at. I think they're going to finish as a 4 or 5 seed this season in the West. I don't think that the Lakers are a very good team, I'd say. Given that their roster isn't great. Lonzo Ball struggled to shoot, like I've been saying. he might make a jump. He might get better, but it's not going to be something drastic better where he's shooting like 45 from three or anything like that. Brandon Ingram, I think, is going to be a very good player this season. Could become a superstar right before our eyes. But it's like the Michael Beasley pickups, the JaVale McGee pickups, Lance Stephenson. That stuff kind of scares me. So I don't think the Lakers are going to be... like, I see him as a team who's going to get bounced in the second round. And I think that's fair. Laker fans don't want to hear it. Laker fans think they're winning the title this year, but I don't think that's the case. I mean, they're not going to get past Golden State. They're not better than Houston. Vegas thinks the Thunder are going to be better. And they got them on par with the Jazz. I think the Jazz are going to be better than Oklahoma City. I think the Oklahoma City and the Lakers should probably have the same win-loss projections rather than the Jazz and the Lakers. For some reason, the Jazz are just being severely underrated. That's fine. Go ahead and underrate them if you want. Or just overlook them if you want. But they're going to be a very good team this year. But as far as it goes down, let me see who Vegas has as the top eight teams in the West. So obviously, like I said, you got Golden State, Houston, Oklahoma City, the Jazz, and Lakers for the first five. After that, it goes Denver. Let's see, who is our seventh team after Denver? It goes... they got Memphis winning 34. That's pretty bold there. Let's see, after 47.5, I think we got the... Where is it at? The Pelicans. Then you got the Timberwolves. And I feel like I'm missing a team in between them. I might not be. Oh, yeah, so like I said, it goes like this. It goes Golden State, Houston, Oklahoma City, the Jazz, Lakers, Denver, New Orleans, and then Minnesota. So that's the top eight teams, at least projected from Vegas to make the playoffs. No San Antonio, which I don't know. I'm not ready to give up on the Spurs yet. I get that they traded Kawhi Leonard away, but let's not forget he basically didn't play at all last season and they still made the playoffs. Granted, they lost in five to the Warriors, but any other West team would have too, besides the Rockets, of course. So I'm not ready to give up on the Spurs. I mean, Vegas got them at 43.5 wins. I think that's... I don't want to say fair, but I think they'll be a little bit better. So then out east, we got the Celtics number one at 57.5. Then it goes Toronto and Philly at 54. Let's see, who do they got third in the east? I think it goes Indiana at fourth. Or is it Milwaukee? It goes Indiana fourth at 40. What do they have them at? 47.5. Then Milwaukee at 46. Let's see, where else do we got it at? So we said Milwaukee at 46. Do we got anyone at 45? And I don't think Vegas is really propping up the East too much. Let me say that. So like I say, yeah, you get Milwaukee at 46. So then I think it goes the Wizards at 44.5. Let's see, who else do we got here? Wizards 44.5. Who's coming in behind them? The Heat. And then you got Detroit at 37. So Vegas doesn't really have the East really being that great of a conference from top to bottom. Of course, you got the Celtics and Toronto and then Philly with decent win-loss projections. But as far as the rest, I mean, a lot of them are going to be under 500. And I'd say, I mean, it's pretty fair given Boston the second highest win total. Of course, you're going to give the Warriors the top. The Thunder, the Rockets, I think, are going to lose a little something without Ariza. I know they're adding Melo, but I'm not sure how much. Like, I think he's going to fit in well there, but I'm not sure how much it's going to make them better. But, I mean, of course, things are going to change. This isn't how it's going to end up. I mean, you got the, you got the Pacers at 47. I could see them winning more. I could see the Thunder winning less than 50. I think I could see the Lakers winning less than 48, probably 47, 46. New Orleans, I'm not sure they'll make the playoffs. I get Anthony Davis has been great, but I mean, before DeMarcus Cousins got there, they weren't necessarily a playoff team. Plus, they lost Rondo this season. They did add Randle and kept Mirotic, so maybe that helps, but I'm not sure how much I believe in the Pelicans. I think the Timberwolves are going to hit the over as far as their win-loss total. They got them at 44.5 wins. I think it'll be the over there. I mean, I'm not really sure why we're underrating the Timberwolves. Maybe because of like the comments that have been made this offseason as far as Jimmy Butler not being happy there. But I think Jimmy Butler's a professional. I think he knows that he's got a job to do. So I think they'll be better than 44 wins. I think they'll, because like right now, the Vegas has them as the 8th seed in the West. They were going to be the 3rd last year if Jimmy Butler doesn't get hurt. So I think they'll be better. I'll just say that. All right. And as far as the rest goes, like what else is going on in the NBA? Tony Parker ended up thanking the Spurs and all that in a Players Tribune letter. Of course, why not? I mean, every player, professional player, uses the Players Tribune. I mean, Tony Parker, it's going to be weird seeing him play for the Hornets. It's like Olajuwon playing for the Raptors. And I think Ewing ended up playing for like the Magic or something like that at the end of his career. So I don't really understand it. But I mean, he wants to play a couple more years and there's not really a fit for him on the Spurs. So I guess I get it that way. But either way, there's not really much else going on in the NBA. Right now, like I said, the Vegas Sportsbook win totals is what's being talked about right now. And more so the Lakers, given that, like I said, ESPN had them not making the playoffs as far as their little win-loss total thing. That's ridiculous. I mean, can we stop with all the numbers? When you have a team with LeBron not making the playoffs, obviously your algorithm or whatever they use to conduct it is wrong and shouldn't be used. And I could be wrong. I mean, ESPN has said some pretty out there things before, came up with some pretty out there things, but of course sometimes they come out being right. So we'll see, I guess, but if the Lakers aren't a playoff team, then something went extremely wrong. I'll just say that. So we're going to wrap it up here for this segment. Next up, like I said, we'll be talking about anything else going on in the world of sports, so stay tuned and I will be right back.
Are you looking for help for your fantasy football team? Check out the GSMC Fantasy Football Podcast. Get today's best advice on who to start, who to sit, even who you should draft. From sleeper picks to red-hot lineups, they got it all covered for you. That's gsmcpodcast.com/fantasy-football-podcast. We'll cover traditional leagues, dynasty, PPR, even IDP leagues. When you need fantasy help, there's just one show to hit up. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Visit gsmcpodcast.com for more info.
Welcome back to the GSMC Sports Podcast. We spent that first segment talking about the Yankees. They're only 2.5 up on Oakland for that top wildcard spot. I think they're up 4 or 5 on the Mariners right now. So it's not complete panic mode for the Yankees, but we're getting close to that, I'd say. Second segment, we talked about the Hall of Fame ceremony, talked about Terrell Owens, and gave my opinion on who I thought was the number one receiver of all time. I think it's Randy Moss. That's just my opinion. I mean, you're going to think it's Jerry Rice. You might also think it's Terrell Owens. I could care less. Third segment, we talked NBA. And now for this fourth one, we will be talking about anything else going on in the world of sports. And we got a couple of things to cover. So let's get into it. Corey Coleman, I figured was going to be the number two receiver for the Browns this season. I say number two receiver, meaning he's going to be on the other side of the boundary with Josh Gordon, where you have Jarvis Landry playing in the slot. That's what I mean by number two receiver. I'm not saying he's going to be the second best or anything like that. But either way, I figured it was going to be a decent year for Corey Coleman because, I mean, the last couple of seasons he's treated as a number one receiver, and I think that that's been a problem. Corey Coleman's not a number one receiver. I mean, you've seen that immediately. He's a number two guy. But, of course, he ends up getting traded to good old Buffalo. Congrats. You get to go from Cleveland to Buffalo. And I think it's the only one of the few times that you could downgrade there. But he did. Buffalo doesn't really seem like a great place to live. And I mean, it's not. It just seems like it snows way too much. And like I said, it's just not great. Like Joakim Noah said about Cleveland. I don't think anyone ever says that I'm going to go on vacation to Cleveland. Like, what's so great about Cleveland? Cleveland, I think you could find some beauty in there. Buffalo, I mean, come on now. Who says, oh yeah, I'm going on vacation to Buffalo? What is there to do in Buffalo? I mean, I'm sure not much. Let's see. Let's see if you could find things to do in Buffalo besides go to a Bills game. Because, I mean, obviously that's a given. Let's see. Things to do in Buffalo. Not much. There's the zoo. They got parks. Art galleries. Huh? Not great. But either way, Corey Coleman is going to the snowy city of Buffalo. And this is the thing with NFL players. Some of them don't turn out to have decent careers because they're misused their entire career. Corey Coleman's not a number one guy. If Buffalo uses him as a number two type of receiver, then I'm fine with that. But, I mean, it's not really great considering that Buffalo has got Kelvin Benjamin there. That's another thing, too. Kelvin Benjamin says that he wishes he would have got drafted by someone else or had a different quarterback because it just didn't work out. Kelvin Benjamin might need to look towards his ability because you know what? The dude didn't do a thing with Buffalo last season. Kelvin Benjamin seems like one of those guys that thinks he's really a number one receiver when in reality is a number two or a number three. I mean, the guy has only had, I think, one 1,000-yard reception season. And I'd say that Cam Newton is a top 10 quarterback in the league. And that's just fact of the matter, I'd say. Let me see if I can pull up Benjamin's career stats so far since he's been in the league since 2014. So came into the league 2014, didn't play 2015. 2014 was his first season where he had 73 receptions, 1,000 yards, 9 touchdowns. I'm not sure where Cam Newton was the problem there. It's 2016, 63 receptions, 941 yards, 7 touchdowns. 2017, he plays 8 games with Carolina, 32 receptions, 475 yards, 2 touchdowns, then gets traded right before the deadline, plays 6 games with the Bills, 16 receptions, 217 yards, 1 touchdown. Your numbers seem to get worse once you were playing without Cam Newton. I don't know. Crazy, right? Kelvin Benjamin isn't as good as he thinks he is, and that's fine. He's not going to realize it because, of course, confidence is a crazy thing. He's a number two receiver at best. Number three, number four receiver at worst. He's not a number one guy. I'm sorry, but it's the truth. So the Bills are going to be heading into their season with Kelvin Benjamin and Corey Coleman as guys who 1 and 2, when in reality they should both be 2s or 3 and 4. I mean, they're not great. Corey Coleman, I think, could be a very good number two receiver. I don't think he'll ever be a great number one. Neither will Kelvin Benjamin. But as far as the whole saying you needed a different quarterback, you should have been drafted by the Panthers. Panthers don't need Kelvin Benjamin. Kelvin Benjamin needs the Panthers. Carolina did very well without Kelvin Benjamin. I mean, what? When did the Panthers, what year did they go to the Super Bowl? Was Kelvin Benjamin playing that year? Was that the year he was, hurt? Let me see real quick. It was, it's got to be Super Bowl 50, that was 2015. So I believe that was the year Kelvin Benjamin didn't play. I mean, like I said, Panthers don't need him. Don't need him at all. And that's fine. I mean, let's look at it. He's played in 3 playoff games. His rookie year, he had 4 receptions for 33 yards in their first playoff game. Then the second game where they lost to Seattle, he had 7 receptions for 75 yards and 2 touchdowns. For this past year, against the Jags, he had 1 reception, 9 yards. Like I said, Kelvin Benjamin isn't as good as he thinks. Carolina's offense had its best year without him. And I might sound like a hater, but I'm just spitting facts out here. Literally had their best season as an offense without him. The guy's a number two. But, I mean, we'll see the Bills try to make him a number one, or Corey Coleman try to make him a number one. And you see scouts saying that Corey Coleman's a bust and all that, and he's not as good as everyone put him out to be. You NFL draft analysts, it's your fault for having him come in as a number one receiver type. I don't think Corey Coleman was ever a number one type of receiver. He's always a backup or a number two, number three type of guy. And that's funny how guys get labeled as a bust when in reality they were just brought into the league at spots where they shouldn't have been at. I think that's on the GMs and on the draft analysts for getting it wrong. But people tend to not admit that they're wrong. And that's fine, I guess. So there's that. And then I mentioned Tiger Woods earlier. Started off the first two rounds hot. Finished off the second round, the last two rounds terrible. 3 over for both of them, I believe it was. And it just seems like Tiger was pressing. I mean, Tiger Woods came close to winning at the Open. Ended up choking there on those two holes. And then here, I mean, just wasn't great. Tiger Woods has got to figure out a way to get it done for all 4 rounds rather than playing for good for only 2 out of the 4. I mean, we got the PGA Championship coming up. I think he's in Roy McIlroy's group and Justin Thomas's group. That's going to be a fun group to watch. I'll definitely be checking it out. But either way, Tiger Woods needs to stop pressing and needs to just relax and play the game of golf. I think that's his problem now. It's just he's pressing way too much. So we'll see what ends up happening with him. I mean, will Tiger end up getting that major that has long slipped away from him since obviously his problems? Who knows? But Tiger Woods is still a very good golfer and has any chance in the world to pull one out. So we'll see how it all ends up going down. So let's see what else is going on in the world of sports. Looking like Sam Darnold could end up being the week one starter for the Jets. I'm fine with that. I'm just curious what happens with Teddy Bridgewater if that happens, because McCown's not getting cut. Does Bridgewater get cut and is that the end of his career? Or maybe some quarterback gets hurt in camp? It's a possibility. But I mean, Teddy Bridgewater and his agent played this whole offseason wrong. Maybe they didn't really have a choice, but going to the Jets was the worst possible decision because you knew they were taking a quarterback round one. Why are you going to send Teddy Two Gloves over there when you know he's got no future with that team? I don't get it. But that's what they ended up doing. So let's see. I think that's pretty much it for today. So we're going to wrap it up here. Today we talked New York Yankees. We talked Hall of Fame ceremony. We talked NBA. And we talked about a bunch of other things going on in the world of sports, as we always do. So thanks for listening to the GSMC Sports Podcast. As always, I am your host, Jesse Tapia. I will be back tomorrow, so stay tuned. And I will talk to you guys later.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts Sports Podcast, part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network, from movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.